welcome to More Than a Movie, a show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll be welcoming onto the show very shortly, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies. Today, we're reminiscing with nostalgic films from a bygone era. Yes, get your handkerchiefs out, because we're going back into the past, talking about some noteworthy movies which powerfully recreate a past historical era in human history. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but most of all, you'll probably just wish you were really young all over again, or is that just me? Well, anyway, enough of this wistful pontificating. Let me begin by introducing our guest for this week. Monica Maslowska is a practicing screenwriter. She also lectures on writing for audiovisual media at the Faculty of Media and Knowledge Sciences at the University of Malta. Her doctoral research explores storytelling and screenwriting in contemporary Malta. Monica has been consistently involved in writing, shadow writing, and co-authoring film scripts for the past 15 years. And she joins me here in the studio today. Hello, Monica, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Andrew. Thank you for having me and thank you for the invitation.
Great to have you here, Monica. So let's start by talking a bit about whether you remember how you first fell in love with movies and filmmaking.
Yes, there is one particular movie, and I think we all have that one movie that really made us fall in love. And for me, of course, it was Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh, of course,
none
yes.
None other than Sergio Leone.
The classic Western, yeah. Spaghetti Western. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And tell us what you loved about that particular piece of work.
Images, music, and emotions.
Right, the imagery.
It made me feel it was like the wow moment or the aha moment for me.
Okay, and where did you go from there? Did you explore Westerns more, or did you start moving into other genres? Or?
Oh, I was a child. I forgot to mention when that happened.
So right.
I was trying to come to terms why it made me feel, you know, the way it did. It was such a novel, you know, emotion that I didn't know what to do with it.
So it had a powerful effect on you as a kid.
Very much so.
Right.
Very much so, yeah.
And then what led you into sort of the story creation process when you were growing up?
I could always write. However, I always wanted to be a translator because I thought as a writer, whether a novelist or a particular screenwriter, you have something to say. I always thought I didn't, you know. So I kind of, that realization came a little late. I was like in my 30s.
Right.
Okay. And then I realized, no, actually, yeah, I do have, you know, something to say. Because actually I was working towards becoming a translator until someone, this person, a headhunter, he said, Monica, just stop. Go into screenwriting. There is, you know, so much in you, so many stories, you know, you can tell. And actually, it's almost like I needed this permission. And things just really started to pour out, come out, you know, like a river.
And do you, where was the inspiration coming from at that point? Was it your own past, or was it stories you'd heard as a kid?
Everything.
Or?
From right. everywhere, because right. that's how, you know, we kind of, where we draw our inspirations, you know, from your past experiences, the things you read, you were told, you read, you watched. Yeah.
So, Monica, one of the things that always struck me about filmmaking, it's such a long, drawn-out process. When you see a film which really has a strong message or thematic focus, that seems like such a sophisticated piece of work to write and for a director to then render into an actual movie. Can you comment on how that works?
Okay, first of all, yes, it's a very long process, but process that is made up of three phases, the pre-production, production, and post-production. Mm-hmm. We also say that a movie is made three times, in the pre-production by the screenwriter, then it is adapted, shot by the filmmaker, and then, you know, in post-production, in the editing suite by the editor, right? And sometimes you can have three different, well, not completely three different movies, but there are, you know, variations. So, for instance, I can say that when I write, I try to be aware of so many things at once. You know, that's why it is a kind of, you know, it's really difficult to be a screenwriter. You have to construct a story that has, you know, clear structure. You have to create complex characters. You know, there has to be a message. Yes, so important, the overall message. What is this movie, you know, really about? Because to be honest, that's why we watch movies, to feel something.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a juggling act of all these different
yeah,
components.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, that just seems like such a challenging process.
It is. It is. And very often people say, you know, he or she shot overnight to start on. Well, it's been 10 years of hard work before that night.
Absolutely. Yeah? So there's a gestation process.
Okay. So there's the gestation process of an idea. But then you write different stories. You find out who you are first and foremost as a human being. Mm. That is so important. You need to have self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to grow as a, you know, as a screenwriter. Because actually when you do make a mistake, once it's out there on a big screen, you have nowhere to hide.
Indeed. Indeed. Very interesting. Well, so Monica, thank you for those thoughts. Today's episode, we're focusing on nostalgic films from bygone eras. And I wondered, do you have a film within that sort of subgenre that you are particularly fond of?
I do. I didn't see it coming. It is actually Once Upon a Time in Hollywood this time.
I'm Rick Dalton. It's my pleasure, and Mr. Schwartz.
Call me Marvin. Put it down.
That's your son?
No, that's my stunt double, Cliff Booth.
Last night, we watched a Rick Dalton double feature. All the shooting. I love that stuff, you know, the killing.
A lot of killing.
Anybody order fried sauerkraut?
So, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's 2019 movie. What did you love about this film?
Well, I think this nostalgic indulgence, or, you know, an analogy for a bygone era of film culture.
Mm.
And, you know, this feeling culturally, I think this past 5 years, we kind of are looking, you know, to the past. So, for instance, you know, vinyl is back. Yay.
Mm.
And the look of videotapes, for instance, is recreated for music videos or even some film projects. We have the return of the 1980s as fashion, yeah, the high-waisted jeans, you know, music,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh.
The reviving of the techno scene of the 1980s. And also, you know, it's a tribute to so many wonderful film directors like Sam Peckinpah, like John Ford, like Robert Altman, and some, you know, B-movies directors. And of course, then there is Sergio Corbucci, yeah, because I was, you know, had three Sergios. Even though it's a world, it's a very male movie, you know, for,
yes.
You know, that's
yes,
the only drawback. Yeah.
True.
But what I think what, you know, Tarantino did, you know, it was just, you know, beautiful kind of, you know, textured dreamscape of shots of close-ups, you know, in cinematic, you know, cues taken from other filmmakers, you know, because even as screenwriters, we should be inspired and learn from the past masters, you know.
Absolutely. And Tarantino, obviously a very big name in filmmaking today, but someone with his resources, I guess, can really take the time and put the production staff into creating that very rich textured feel that you talk about. Because in a way, the film was sort of it was more of a meditation on the era that was like the late 60s in
very
Hollywood,
much so.
Right?
Yes.
So.
Yes.
And what about the story? Did you enjoy the narrative side of?
I loved it, obviously because of the Polish, you know, connection, because of Roman Polanski. Yeah?
Yes.
Because what Tarantino did, he gave us this romanticized, you know, version of Charles Manson.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And also, I think very often in screenwriting, you know, we when we create a story, ideally have a question, what if? Yeah. And some incredible stories, you know, come up. And this is what I think Tarantino did. What if Charles Manson did not actually butcher Roman Polanski and his friends and his pregnant wife? So we had this, you know, alternative, ending to a most dramatic, tragic story in Hollywood.
And an ending that sort of explodes, I felt, into almost comical violence at some point, which
seems
to be Tarantino's want in his movies.
Yeah, I think he could not help himself. You know, he had to give us this, but I'm glad the dog didn't die.
Indeed, the dog made it, yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for those thoughts, Monica, and thank you also for telling us just a little bit about your insights into the screenmaking process, the screenwriting process. We really hope that some of your work finds its way onto big screens here in Malta so that people can enjoy it very soon.
It already did.
And we hope that there will be more.
Thank you.
So thank you so much, Monica.
Thank you, Andrew.
Now then, what about nostalgic movies from a bygone era that was shot here in Malta. Well, we've already mentioned this film in episode 1 of our show. Kon-Tiki from 2012 uses the Grand Harbour in Valletta to double up for late 1940s Peru. It tells the story of an intrepid group of Norwegian explorers who set out to follow the footsteps of early South American pioneers by sailing from Peru all the way across the Pacific on nothing but a balsa wood raft.
Gentlemen, your magazine will be with me on a raft at the mercy of the winds all the way to Polynesia. It's further than from Chicago to Moscow, 5,000 miles. I will prove that the oceans were not barriers, but roads, not impediments, but pathways. That South American people sailed to Polynesia 1,500 years ago.
Now, whilst the film primarily takes place at sea, it is very much a period piece, and that's particularly evident in the early New York City scenes in the film, which are eloquently recreated with impressive costumes, set design, and visual effects. Malta was, in fact, the main shooting location for the film. It used the water tanks at the Mediterranean Film Studios in Calcara for those many scenes on the raft at sea. It's beautifully scored by Johan Söderqvist, imbuing this adventure story with a deep sense of mysticism throughout. Wonderful film music. And Paul Sverhagen stars as the leader of the expedition. He's one of the finest actors to emerge from modern Scandinavian cinema, doing very convincing work here. Agnes Kittelsen, playing his wife, also does really well with a thankless role that mainly consists of her talking down a phone line. Brilliant facial acting here. In truth, the film touches on a lot of the same spiritual territory as Ang Lee's celebrated film Life of Pi from the same year. And whilst that film was undoubtedly a visual tour de force, I have to say that personally I was massively disappointed with Life of Pi in narrative terms. Kon-Tiki for me is a far more insightful and affecting story, really focusing on an intrepid human spirit fighting against seemingly insurmountable odds. The lens is placed on team psychology, how each member of the group reacts under increasing stress and apparent hopelessness. It almost evokes Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe in places. Also referenced in the film is Edgar Allan Poe's dark short story, A Descent into the Maelstrom, a powerful read for any boating enthusiast, and a tale that inspired countless movies, including an impressive action sequence in the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie from 2007, At World's End. Back to our Norwegian voyages, though. Many international films have been shot in Malta over the years, but for me, Kon-Tiki really is one of the most accomplished of them. It's touching and beautifully rendered throughout, and comes highly recommended. Going back a few years then to another film shot in Malta, The Count of Monte Cristo, directed by Kevin Reynolds in 2002. It's based, of course, on the classic adventure novel by French author Alexandre Dumas, All the Way Back in 1844. One of several film versions of this classic tale, it tells the story of Edmond Dantès, a man wrongfully accused of treason and imprisoned on Château d'If, a grim island fortress off the coast of southern France. But this is a man who doesn't give up easily on life. Mais non, monsieur.
You are a soldier. Teach me the knife, the sword.
Too good. His walk of escape. In return for your help, I offer something priceless.
The treasure of Monte Cristo. Follow the clues.
You are wealthier than any man I have ever heard of.
Starring Guy Pearce, Jim Caviezel, and Richard Harris, the film is set in Napoleonic Europe in the early 1800s. It actually includes an early scene with the diminutive Gallic leader himself, still exiled on the Isle of Elba at that point in history. Now, Valletta and Vittoriosa are here used to recreate 19th century Marseille in the south of France, and St. Mary's Tower on Camino was also used for the castle exterior scenes. With themes of incarceration, hope, vengeance, and forgiveness, the story has more than a smidge in common with 1994's wildly popular prison drama, The Shawshank Redemption. So, if you enjoyed the huge heart of Frank Darabont's celebrated Hollywood blockbuster, you might want to shake off your shackles and introduce yourself to a rather more swashbuckling rendition in The Count of Monte Cristo. Well, it's now time to venture beyond the shores of our hallowed Isles of Malta as we discover three more nostalgic films from a bygone era. And our first film today is a romantic fantasy from 1980, Somewhere in Time. Christopher Reeve plays a Chicago playwright who uses self-hypnosis to meet the actress whose vintage portrait hangs in the gallery of a grand hotel.
Come back to me.
Richard Collier is about to begin an incredible journey into another realm, another lifetime, in search of the love he could never find in this one.
That's Elise McKenna. Starred in a play in the hotel theater.
When was this play done?
1912.
Dr. Finney, is time travel possible?
That is a question.
Yes, believe it or not, this is actually a time travel movie of sorts. But don't be fooled, for it's primarily a romance of the most unabashedly sincere kind. Now, many people might coin 2004's film The Notebook, based on a novel by Nicholas Sparks, as one of the great romance films. Well, I admit I'm biased here, and Somewhere in Time easily takes that spot for me, despite being some 20 years older. Well, Christopher Reeve was one of the most charming actors of his generation. And despite being famous for his immensely well-judged role as Superman in those groundbreaking films of the late 70s and 80s, he actually had a very respectable body of other work, both in film and in TV. Older listeners will likely be aware of the very tragic story of Reeve's life. In 1995, he fell off a horse while competing in an equestrian competition. He spent the rest of his days paralyzed from the neck down, until his untimely death aged just 52. He was a fine and gentle actor who was very sorely missed. Well, in Somewhere in Time, he's joined by Jane Seymour, who is absolutely radiant here. It's hard to think of a more glowing performance in 80s cinema, really. That said, this was a role that demanded quite a bit more from Seymour than merely wilting under her suitor's bewitching blue-eyed gaze. Villainous duties are performed by Christopher Plummer here, another actor with a very fine filmography that spans several decades, and who, I'm delighted to say, is still acting in movies to this day. Much of Somewhere in Time takes place in the Grand Hotel in 1912, which is sumptuously recreated and lovingly shot by French director Jeannot Schwartz and his team. With a lovely romantic soundtrack, this movie really is a delightful homage to much of early 20th century cinema. And though the story and indeed the cinematography feel deceptively simple, there are powerful themes at work here. It's based on a screenplay by Richard Matheson, yes, he of I Am Legend fame. Matheson's is another name that's already been mentioned here on our show. That was back in episode 5 about fantasy movies. Now, Matheson penned numerous science fiction, horror, and fantasy stories from the 1950s onwards, and he's arguably one of the few 20th century genre writers who really found genuine success translating his work from the page to the big screen. Stephen King is arguably another of those big names that springs to mind. Well, here with Somewhere in Time, Matheson pulls out all the romantic stops. I have a little confession to make, dear listeners. I watched this film when I was a wee young lad of maybe 13 years old, and of course I was totally in love with Jane Seymour. Please tell me I wasn't the only one. Well, anyway, the ending of this film literally traumatized me. This sad story was indelibly etched on my brain for weeks, nay, months after I saw it back then. Do you, listeners, have any films like that? Films you remember seeing as a kid, which had a massively powerful impact on you? Well, after some 30 years, I finally plucked up the courage to watch this movie again as a so-called fully grown adult. And whilst the details of the film aren't quite how I remembered them, funny how that happens, I certainly was reminded of the nostalgic sense of wonder, love, and incredible tenderness that the film evoked in me as a young teenager. This is a film about the emptiness of modern life, the purity of true love, and of its power to transcend time, place, and any obstacles the universe may throw in its way. It's a simple, heartfelt, and deeply romantic piece, very much from a bygone era. So if you're in the mood for a good hard cry, then do get the tissues out for Somewhere in Time. Well, and so at that, it's on to our second nostalgic film of the day, 1994's Il Postino, directed by English filmmaker Michael Radford. On a remote Italian island in the 1950s, a simple postal worker befriends one of his clients, a Chilean poet who's begun living in exile there. They strike up a charming friendship, and eventually the postman is able to use his newfound literary skills to charm the local woman he's loved for years.
Scendi alla stazione di Roma, Pablo Neruda.
Perché non potrebbe firmare? Tutte donne, come è possibile? Donna.
Guardi, non hai mai visto una.
Now look, we talk about a lot of movies on this show. Some are great classics, some are lesser-known gems that I think you should check out. But really, anyone with a love for movies needs to see Il Postino. Massimo Troisi, the lead actor who tragically died mere hours after filming was completed on this film, gives what I'd argue is one of the great modern performances in European cinema. This is a role so effortless, so beautiful in its simplicity and timing, it anchors the entire story. All performers of any kind should study this role for its sheer virtuosity. There's so much nuance, natural comedy, so much sincere affect in his scenes in this film. Also starring here is the French actor Philippe Noiret, a man with an extensive filmography. More mature listeners might recognize him from another classic period piece, Cinema Paradiso. Here in El Postino, Noiret plays the charmingly articulate Pablo Neruda, an exiled poet who becomes something of a father figure to our protagonist's innocent, wistful postman. Maria Grazia Cucinotta, another big name in Italian cinema, joins a raft of other supporting actors, and she's quite literally ablaze on screen here, very fine and confident acting. I remember reviewing this movie back on the student radio station in Oxford, way back in the mid-90s when it came out, and the film was as poignant then as it still is today. Whilst in many ways the film is a retelling of the classic Cyrano de Bergerac poetic play from French literature, this Italian film is really so much more. Here's a lovely little moment, and for listeners who don't speak Italian, here a very annoyed auntie complains to the Chilean poet after his postal protégé begins charming her niece with his poetry.
Gira intorno alla mia osteria quel tale Mario Ruopolo, il quale ha insidiato mia nipote.
Oh, cosa le ha detto?
Metafore.
E allora?
E allora, con le metafore, mi ha riscaldato la ragazza come una stufa. Un uomo il cui unico capitale è quello di avere il fungo tra le dita dei piedi. Ma se hai i piedi pieni di microbi, con la bocca sa dire cose che incantano.
No.
Sì.
This is a beautiful, charming little film about love, friendship, spiritual awakening, and self-actualization. A classic and deeply moving piece of nostalgic cinema. Do remember to write your return address when you send for the wonderful Il Postino. Finally for today then, we move on to a more modern period piece, and it's 2015's Little Boy by Mexican director Alejandro Monteverde. It's set in 1950s coastal California and tells the story of a young boy who's captivated by the storytelling adventures he takes with his dad. But the child is forced to cope with the loss of his father when the man enlists to fight in the war.
My story takes place on the home front. That's my dad.
I wanted to be just like him.
Everything we did became a great adventure.
Do you believe we can do this?
Yes, I believe we can do this!
Partner, do you believe you can do this?
I believe I can do this!
Pepper!
Art Flint, Busby, it's time to go to bed.
All was good in the old Busby home, or so I thought.
You're going to war.
Yes.
I don't want you to go. Why can't we stay together?
I enjoyed this film because it's deliberative, it takes its time, it knows what it wants to say. When I was watching, I felt the steady storytelling hand of director Monteverdi. But the film faced a lot of negative press from critics. Many brashly wrote it off as a misguided, faith-based movie. I'm not quite sure when belief, religion, and spirituality became dirty words in modern film reviewing. Regardless, the many criticisms leveled at Little Boy honestly didn't ring true for me. Call me a contrarian if you like, I must say that I rather appreciated the sincere point of view of this film's narrative, taking a decidedly different tack to many modern films as it does. But we're talking about nostalgic films from bygone eras in today's episode, and that's why I mention Little Boy here. 1950s post-war America is gloriously reproduced on screen, with sumptuous set design, brilliant costume work, beautiful digital backdrops, and plenty of colourful visual effects to spice up the composition. It sometimes almost feels like we're paging through a child's colourfully illustrated storybook here. Lovely work by both the pre- and post-production teams. Cast-wise, this is a fun blend of actors, with Emily Watson, Kevin James, Tom Wilkinson, and Michael Rapaport all doing good work. Our lead, though, child actor Jacob Salvati, was aged just 12 when he appeared in this film. It's a really charming, sweet, and heartfelt performance. The movie has a strong fantasy element, augmenting the wartime and historical backdrop of the narrative, and it's all very sincerely portrayed through the eyes of our young protagonist. There are arguably a couple of minor missteps in the narrative, this when we get to the third act and the climax. For me, though, they did little to detract. Thematically centered on paternal loss, racism, belief in the extraordinary, and the transformative power of friendship, you may well enjoy this rose-tinted love letter to post-war American family life.
You want to move a mountain? There's one. Go ahead. Move it.
Don't measure yourself from here to the floor. Measure yourself from here to the sky. Makes you the tallest boy in town.
Well, we talked about several lovely movies today, and it's striking, isn't it, how many of them are new spins on classic tales from literature, sometimes stories that were written hundreds of years ago. Just a reminder, really, that the greatest stories echo through the ages, both on the page and on the silver screen, and that's precisely why we remember them, of course. But what did you think of the movie selection in our show? Did we make you think of some worthy nostalgic films from a bygone era? Did the suggestions today convince you to seek out and watch one of the films that's been mentioned? If so, we'd love to know what you thought of it. For all that and any other feedback, suggestions and questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thanks to our guest, Monica Maslowska, for joining us today, and also, of course, to our illustrious sound engineer, Redent Abdillah. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io. The clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join me again next week for cinematic adventures that are so much more than just a movie.